I'm Marielle. Guys. You know, well, I'll just say this, which was really sort of funny, was I was driving in tonight, and so I just moved back to the Bay Area a couple years ago, and then I found the Danville Group, which is my group. But like 20 years ago, almost to the day, I moved when I needed to get away from my crazy household. You know, the day I was able to move out, I like left from Florida and came all the way over here. I got on a plane, got on a BART, and found an apartment right over, like, I don't know the directions, but like you could throw a stone from my apartment to the Hickory Pit. And I was driving in and I saw the Hickory Pit and I thought, this is just too funny. Like, here I am today, 20 years later, here talking about my recovery. So that was just like, oh my God, God is funny. So anyway, let's see what I want to talk about. You know, I had an idea earlier. I guess it was because I had said to someone, oh, no big deal. And I use that saying a lot. I say no big deal like all the time. And I thought about it for a minute and I thought, you know, I feel like my life has been all about telling myself that it's no big deal. Like, I think that before I got into Al-Anon, I sort of lived like within this range of emotion that was like basically like this. And like, if I was up here, I was generally good. And if I was down here, I was generally bad. And anything in between, I didn't know how to identify. I didn't know if I was feeling ambivalent or terrified or enthusiastic. Like there were no nuances. It was just kind of like generally good or generally bad. And you know, I remember the day that I started to tell myself, oh, it's no big deal, and carried it throughout my whole life. I was 14 years old and I was living in Ogden, Utah at the time, with my mom, and this is the first time I'd lived with her in a long time. She wasn't really present while I was growing up. And I'm standing in sort of like the breakfast nook. We had a small house and I was kind of in like the place where we ate, and there were some cupboards over here to the right. And then I see my mom get out of her red Mercury, if you even remember that was a car once upon a time. And she's got her sunglasses on, and she gets out of her car. She was driving, and she comes up the like three steps to the front door. She steps onto the hardwood floor. She opens the door and she walks like a perfect diagonal, like into the walking into the cupboards. And so I kind of intercept her, and I knew in that moment that to be scared. I was terrified. Something had changed. And you know, I pulled off her sunglasses, and she kind of had this like bewildered look in her eye, and she went over to the, you know, she wanted to go to the bathroom. I don't know, but she's in the bathroom now, and she's like, I can hear her fumbling around, and you know, I'm back in the kitchen, and she comes out. I'm standing by the sink, and she comes out with in her right hand a tube of toothpaste, and in her left hand, like, it was like a barrette that she had taken out of her hair, and she just kept looking down at it, and she was like so confused about how the tube of toothpaste got into her hand. And essentially she had just come back from the hospital where they had given her a bunch of Demerol, because this was the beginning of her journey, like where she became a drug addict for 25 years. I just ended up taking her, you know, downstairs to the basement where her room was and putting her to bed. And I'm sure that wasn't the first time that I had to take care of my mom. I'll just back up a minute. So my mom is the reason I'm here. I'm an adult child. You know, she lived a very sheltered life. She got married at 18. She had five babies like right away. I kind of think, you know, I have this, my own theory, that my mom was really an addict her entire life. It's just that she started using drugs when I was 14. And so she had like five kids, and then when she, you know, wasn't gonna have any more kids because there were some health issues, she's like, all right, I want more kids, I'm gonna adopt kids. So then she adopted some kids, and then she realized, like, there's too many people in this house, and so I gotta stop with the kid thing. And so she went back to school, and she studied and studied and studied and studied until she got her doctorate degree. And then after that, she wanted to study more. And that is just like how my mom was. And that's who I knew growing up, but she was just never around because she was always at the library. But so that's a little background on sort of how we landed in Ogden, Utah at 14 years old. She was a professor. She was teaching at the local university, and she found drugs, and they just swallowed her whole. You know, and it was terrifying. And I remember that feeling of absolute terror, because I just knew. Anyway, there's alcoholism all over my family. I think I had a great grandfather who was an alcoholic who killed himself, and my brother's an alcoholic, and I have some uncles that are drinkers. And so anyway, this has been permeating through my family lines for a long time. When I got to Al-Anon, so this is how I had been affected at this point, which was 3 or 4 years ago. My fiance had called off the wedding. My work was okay. I had a good job, but I absolutely could not assert myself at all. Like, at all. And my family life, like my immediate family, you know, it was just like that we were embroiled in like constant criticism and gossip, and it was just kind of like a black hole of just, and it was like, oh, this is my life. And it was awful. And I couldn't feel anything. Like I said, I couldn't really, you know, I could cry because I knew it was bad and I didn't like it, but I really, so I began the journey of like identifying my feelings, as simple as that sounds, but that's true. Today I'm married, and, you know, work is going great. You know, I'm able to talk to my boss about promotions that I want and not be afraid. You know, and in my family life, I like to think I've become a better influence there in that group dynamic. So the first three things I learned when I came to Al-Anon, number one was to be quiet, to just be quiet. And my 4-year-old niece has a saying, and it's, zip it, lock it, put it in your pocket. And I was like, that is so great. I zipped it, locked it, put it in my pocket. And it was like impossible. I mean, for me, I came from a family that was like constant arguing. Like, it was very loud. Half my family's Cuban, half of us are Italian. And so it was like constant fighting. I mean, that was the way we spoke to each other. And this was like, I mean, that was just, it was normal for me. And I loved to get drama going, and I loved that. And I had no idea I was so addicted to that. And, you know, here I was in another relationship where I was just like stirring up trouble all the time. And with a guy who was like, you know, what am I going to do? Like, I would bait him. I mean, if there wasn't a fight, like something was wrong, I had to start the fight, you know? So, I just finally started, and you know, once the fight started, it was like a car out of control skidding on ice. It just was like, whoo, like, and we were, it was, and it was awful. The fights were awful. And so I started to just like shut up. And I'm telling you, that single-handed bit of advice changed my life. I mean, he didn't know what to do with me. He really was just like, who is this person? But our life finally stabilized and we could have normal conversations. And gosh, what a terror I had been. So that was really great. The second thing I learned was to, you know, stop trying to fix everything. I remember when my mom was kind of like 10 years into her addiction, I would organize conference calls with everyone in my family. And I would get a conference call dial-in number and a code, and I'd be the host, and I'd get everyone on the call, and we'd do them like bi-monthly so we could talk about how we're going to fix my mom. And it's just insanity. And so, you know, taking that hat off and just like every day, just whether I'm at work, whomever it is, just, you know, I can listen. I can say, oh yeah, cool. And then the third thing, and this is about where I moved from Sacramento back here, and I started going to the Danville meeting. I started really working on this one, and I still am, and it is a beast, is to stop lying. Because I didn't think I was a liar. Like, I definitely didn't think I was a liar. I mean, I loved the half-truths, you know, and I knew that because I'd get into hot water with my husband about that. But, I mean, I was a liar in so many ways. And when I got to the Danville meeting, it was like we peeled a layer back, and it was very clear how I had been lying for so long. Like before that, it was just because in Sacramento I had a great group, but you know, it was like, okay, how do I work on not enabling my brother? And you know, how do I communicate to my fiance? And that was very important. But you know, I feel like now I'm at just a whole nother deeper level, which is I cannot say yes when I mean no. I cannot be in friendships that I don't want to be in anymore. I mean, it is painful to do that, you know, and there's just, and I think it's part of our culture. I think, you know, we say, hi, how are you? I'm fine. It's just, I mean, that's just part of our culture, but I'm not willing to do it anymore, and I'm being held accountable on that one. One of the first things I started working on was I had a business acquaintance. This is when I came into the Danville meeting. I had a business acquaintance who, you know, I didn't honestly really like her. You know, we had the industry in common, but other than that, she wasn't my type. But she always really wanted to hang out. And so I'd hang out and it was just like, oh, what am I doing with my time? This is like, I'm dragging myself. And my sponsor was really like, you just got to say no, or you got to not respond to her text or what have you. And I remember I showed up at a Saturday morning meeting one day because I had had lunch with her that week. And I came out of that lunch having promised to help her like toe in toe, like with her plan her 50th birthday party. I was going to be like her wingman for her 50th birthday party. Like I took on this enormous, like, important occasion for her. And I didn't want to at all. And it was horrifying and humiliating having to tell her, I'm sorry, I can't do that. And, you know, it's been enough times where my sponsor likes to say I land in a pool of blood. It's been enough pools of blood that, you know, I'm really, it's really getting harder and harder to lie in my life. So, you know, with that, you know, I think, you know, all in all, it's really for me about the freedom that I get with this program. It's just like incrementally, I get more and more liberated to live my life. And man, is that priceless. So I'm so grateful for you guys. Thank you.